Let's call this meeting the House Judiciary Committee to order. Before we begin, I want to thank Shannon McCain, House Judiciary Secretary. And I should note that it is Monday, May 2nd, 2022. It is 1:46 p.m. Shannon makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Talia Ames from the Juneau LIO who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Vance, my Vice Chair, Representative Snyder, and myself, Representative Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today, we're going to change the order because we have some members that are presenting bills in other committees. Our first order of business today is House Bill 325, Domestic Violence, sponsored by Representative Rasmussen. This is the second hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee, and I'd like to open public testimony on House Bill 325. First, I'll ask if there's anyone in the room who would like to provide public testimony on House Bill 325. Hearing and seeing no one, I'll look online. We have one person online for public testimony. Mike Henry, please state your name and any affiliation you may have, and you can proceed. We generally limit public testimony to 2 minutes. If there's matters you bring up that lead to questions, we'll probably extend that time a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name, for the record, is Sergeant Mike Henry. I'm with the Alaska State Troopers. I'm currently a sergeant with the Alaska State Troopers, based in Soldotna. I've been a state trooper for 18 years and worked in a variety of post locations. And just want to confirm, can you hear me okay?
Just fine. Thank you.
I'm a police instructor for strangulation investigations and sex crimes, and have also a lot of experience working and investigating domestic violence. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of the Department of Public Safety in support of House Bill 325, an act relating to domestic violence. House Bill 325 modifies the definition of crimes involving domestic violence, which is under AS 1866-990, to include harassment in the second degree. As a crime involving domestic violence, harassment in the second degree, subsection A6. This statute already makes it a crime if, with intent to harass or annoy another person, that person publishes or distributes electronic or printed photographs, pictures, or films that show the genitals, anus, or female breasts of other person, or show that person engaged in a sexual act. What House Bill 325 would do is make this a crime involving domestic violence when committed by a household member against another household member. Such publishing and or distributing non-consensual pornography is sometimes referred to as revenge porn or sextortion. It may be used by a perpetrator against household members as a means of causing harm to them in a variety of ways, but is ultimately another terrible means of asserting power and control over them, which is a primary root of domestic violence offenses. This criminal conduct is being used by perpetrators to coerce victims into doing what the perpetrator wants, or punishing the victim if they do not concede to the abuser's demands. Defining this particular conduct, which is already a crime, as a crime involving domestic violence when committed by a household member against another household member, provides additional protections and access to services for the victim, such as protective orders, brings additional consequences for offenders, such as mandatory arrest, and accurately describes what the conduct often is. In closing, I urge the committee's support of House Bill 325, and thank you for your time, and I'm available for any questions if you have it.
Thank you. Any members of the committee? Actually, before I do that, I recognize that Representative Kirk had joined us at, I would say, about 1:48, and Representative Drummond joined us about 1:50. Any questions for Trooper Henry? I don't see any, but Trooper Henry, I actually have a question for you. In broad measure, the crimes that are currently described as being crimes of domestic violence or within the domestic violence definition are often ones where the person's living in the household or in the same community or very close by. But it seems like in this sexting harassment type conduct, there's the potential that you have somebody that is, say, they're in Fairbanks and they're sending out from where they are in Fairbanks sexting communications about somebody that's in Juneau, and the person in Juneau says they're sending these communications, and it would make the person in Fairbanks subject to mandatory arrest even though they're not kind of in the same household at the time. How, as a trooper, how do you see that issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So for the record, this is Mike Henry in with the troopers. I think the issue you're describing will exist, already exists with some of the other crimes. So, for example, some of the other crimes involving that constitute domestic violence can be other threats. So, for example, stalking, other elements of the crime of harassment in the second degree, terroristic threatening, assault in the third degree, some ways that you create that or cause do that conduct can be by threats. Violating conditions of release can be conduct happening from another place, violating protective order. All of these things that I just rattled off are crimes that currently are crimes that fit the definition of crimes involving domestic violence and can all be done, you know, remotely. I think the big thing to just remember and keep in mind is that for crimes involving domestic violence, we have kind of there's kind of an equation that has to happen. We have to have, it has to be one of the crimes under the definition of crimes involving domestic violence. And then it still has to be a household member against another household member. And that definition of household member is pretty broad to include people who currently live together, but also people who formerly live together. People in a spousal relationship and prior spousal relationship. So it is pretty broad. And so it's really common even now, where we have people committing crimes of domestic violence and it's happening when they're not living in the same household.
What about a couple that had a couple of dates and somebody let pictures be taken when maybe they shouldn't have, but they've never lived in the same household? Would they fall within the definition or would they fall outside this definition?
Yes. So for the definition of a household member, that falls under the 1866-990 section 5, in case anybody, you know, wants to reference that for future or now. But 1866-990 section 5 is where you find the definition of a household member. And it includes, for specific to your question, adults or minors who are current or former spouses, adults or minors who live together or who have lived together, adults or minors who are dating or who have dated. And then it goes on. There's quite a few other things, but it's currently dating and formerly dated. So, there's no limiting to that, you know, being one or two dates. It's if you have dated or currently dated, you're considered household members.
Thank you. Any other questions for Sergeant Henry? And I apologize for calling you Trooper Henry earlier. I've been corrected.
Oh, no problem.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Just wanted to get it on the record through the chair. And how are we defining dated?
I'm not aware of any. Sorry, this is Sergeant Mike Henry again for the record. But I'm not aware of any legal definition for the dating. So it would just be, you know, common. If there's not a legal definition, we just refer to Webster's dictionary definition or common knowledge. So I'm not aware of any, and I'd have to defer if Kelly Howell's on, if you're aware of any case law that defines that, but I'm not aware of any. And I can check with other resources and report back to the committee, but I'm not aware of any technical definitions of that.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions for Sergeant Henry. Thank you very much. Next in the queue, who may have a brief statement, Katie Tapaz, also the state troopers. Ms. Tapaz.
Yes. Good afternoon. This is Katie Tapaz for the record. I am with the Department of Public Safety, Division of Alaska State Troopers. I am a program coordinator, and what that means is I am responsible for doing the majority of the training in conjunction along with Sergeant Mike Henry for domestic violence and sexual assault investigations. I train all law enforcement officers across the state, specifically including municipal troopers, VPSOs, and VPOs. And I'm calling to state that I do support this bill. I think it is very crucial for the legislative body to assess and determine if our state statutes need to be expanded specific to domestic violence. I have worked in this field for over 20 years, so I'm considered a subject matter expert. And in my 20 years, I most certainly have seen perpetrators or offenders, defendants or suspects, however you would like to title them, use different methods to control their victims. And most certainly, sextortion or texting is something that is much more common now, especially with the expansion of online technology. And offenders are consistently finding ways to control their victims. Specific to the discussion you just had, I would like to add a couple quick items. One is that we do have mandatory arrest for all of our crimes of domestic violence. That is defined under Title 18. And in addition to what Sergeant Henry had, I would add we have mandatory arrest within 12 hours. And that's 12 hours from when the event took place. So if something happened, for example, 3 weeks ago, it would not necessarily or does not fit by statute under Title 18 for under mandatory arrest. Officers or troopers still may make an arrest, and that is under a separate statute under Title 12. So within 12 hours, they shall upon probable cause, and after 12, they may. As you discussed, also, we do have a very broad definition of domestic violence specific to household members. That does include persons who have dated or who are currently dating. Most DV offenders do not stop the violence when the relationship ends. And so I do think it is very important to always remember that. And again, sextortion or sexting or revenge porn is a significant method of control that is used by offenders to continue to control their victims even after that relationship has ended or that victim has attempted to safely leave that relationship. I'll stop there and see if anyone has questions for me. Thank you. And again, I do support this bill.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Tipaz? I don't see any. Thank you very much. The next person we have in the queue is Jane Andreen, calling in, I think, with the Alaska Public Health Association. Ms. Andreen, if you want to state your name and your affiliation.
Thank you. My name is Jane Andreen. I'm having a little bit of a tenuous connection, so I hope I don't cut out.
You're loud and clear
I'm Jane
here.
Andreen. Okay, good. Jane Andreen, I live in Douglas, and I am testifying on behalf of the Alaska Public Health Association. We have long recognized that domestic violence is a major public health issue across Alaska. We also recognize that there's a full continuum of action that perpetrators take to control, as was stated earlier, their victims. This adds one more piece. As our technology has increased and expanded over the decades, it is important that we be able to catch and hold offenders accountable as early and as often as we can. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions from the committee. I don't have anyone else in the queue for public testimony, and I don't see anyone new in the room that wasn't here before when I asked if anyone offered public testimony. So I'm closing public testimony on House Bill 325, and at this time we'll hold the bill for further review. Our second order of business today is House Bill 5, Sexual Assault Definition of Consent, sponsored by Representative Tarr. This is the sixth hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee, and before us today, we have a proposed committee substitute. Here to present the committee substitute is my staff, Emma Potter. Ms. Potter, if you please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and you can begin your remarks.
Chairman, members of the House Judiciary Committee, for the record, my name is Emma Potter. I'm staff to Rep. Clayman. I'm going to walk through the changes in House Bill 5, Version R. There are three major changes reflected in the committee substitute. First, Version R grades sexual assault charges. First-degree sexual assault is amended to include sexual penetration without consent with the use of force. Including the use of force component is consistent with Senate Bill 187, which was put forward by the administration. Including grading allows for sexual assault with the use of force to be more easily prosecuted and maintains the use of aggregating factors. Sexual assault in the second degree is amended to include sexual contact without consent by use of force or threat of force. and sexual penetration without consent. I would emphasize that there is no use of force requirement for sexual assault by sexual penetration without consent in the grading for sexual assault in the second degree. And lastly, for the grading changes, sexual assault in the third degree is amended to include sexual contact without consent. The second major change found in the CS is the removal of the sexual abuse of a minor provisions. Public focus has been on the consent provisions of this bill. Based on the invited testimony that we have heard over the last few weeks, we understand that version W made significant changes to the sexual abuse of a minor statutes by creating new crimes. Similar changes have not been seen in other states. The third major change in version R is a modification of the consent definitions. The changes found in the committee substitute rely on the American Law Institute Model Penal Code framework from the most recent draft on sexual assault and related offenses. This section 4 of the bill has 5 different subparagraphs. The first subparagraph expressly states that an expression of lack of consent through words or conduct means there is no consent. This is akin to the no means no concept. Subparagraph 1 also states that the absence of verbal or physical resistance does not establish consent. This is intended to encompass the frozen fear victim. This is the victim who reacts to the experience of being sexually assaulted by freezing. This response is an observed and frequent psychological response. The second subparagraph pertaining to consent states that consent may be expressed or inferred from a person's behavior and both a person's action and inaction in the context of the circumstances. This change reflects the current societal norms. Subparagraph 3 states that consent may be revoked at any time. Clear verbal refusal establishes the revocation of prior consent, and lack of consent may be overridden by subsequent consent given before the conduct at issue. Subparagraph 4 ensures that a person who is incapacitated as a result of an act of the defendant cannot consent. This language was included in Senate Bill 187 as a part of the definition of the separate crimes. Version R of House Bill 5 instead includes this language in the section that defines consent. Finally, for this section, subparagraph 5 deals with the rape by fraud crime. Version R uses language found in other states and specifically draws from the Montana statute. This section says consent is ineffective if induced by force, duress, or deception. Version R maintains a section related to sexual assault examination testing, examination kit testing, I should say. Thank you.
Any questions from members of the committee? Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not entirely sure who to direct it to, but I'm curious if someone could speak to the new section 7 on page 3, specifically removing knowingly causing a person to come into contact with semen from the definition of sexual contact in that paragraph. Could someone please address the rationale and its implications?
So I think I can probably address that better than anybody. There was a, before your service in the legislature, there was a very high profile case, and as a product of that case, we passed an amendment to the sexual assault statutes that specifically addressed the contact with semen, that's the contact with semen without consent that's discussed in that subparagraph. So the purpose of this provision on page 4 at the top is to basically leave the law intact such as we passed it before you joined us.
And Mr. Chair, what is what type of offense is it now then under current law? Do you recollect?
Let's take a brief at ease.
Sorry.
Representative Snyder, I will find the answer to that. I know that the intent is not to take those provisions out, and there was legislation that we did pass, and I just can't find you the statute citation as we sit here today.
Okay, we'll look it up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? There's a proposed committee substitute for House Bill 5 before us. Can I have a motion to adopt the CS as our working document? Representative Eastman.
I'm just wondering, you know, we've had a little bit of conversation previously, but is there going to be a definition in statute, either in the bill or elsewhere, on what we mean when we refer to deception?
Through the chair, I am the chair. The definition is referenced, and the definition of deception would be subject to common usage. And part of the expectation is that the courts would have that. If there were arguments about that, we would expect the courts to work that out, looking at common usage and regular definitions, rather than trying to define it in ways that may actually exclude the acts of deception that should be considered acts of deception.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Snyder?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that the House Judiciary Committee adopt the committee's substitute to House Bill 5, version 32-LS0065/R, as our working document.
I'll object.
Representative Eastman, did you want to speak to your objection? All right, there is an objection. Madam Chair, if you could call the roll.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Snyder?
Yes.
Representative Christ Tompkin?
Yes.
Representative Eastman?
No.
Representative Kirka?
No.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Chair Klayman?
Yes.
5 yea, 2 nay.
So by a vote of 5-2, the committee has adopted the committee's substitute for House Bill 5. And at this time, we will hold House Bill 5. We will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Wednesday, May 4th at 1 p.m. If anyone is considering offering an amendment to House Bill 5 or House Bill 325, please let our office know and submit those amendments electronically by 5 p.m. on Thursday, May 5th. It is my intention to take up amendments to House Bill 5 and House Bill 325 during our meeting on Friday, and then pass those bills out of committee following final questions and discussions. And with regard to House Bill 5, I know last week we had a professor from Duke University that invited testimony. On Wednesday, we'll have a professor from the University of Pennsylvania also involved with the model penal code revisions who will be testifying as invited testimony about the CS to House Bill 5. Representative Snyder, did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay.
Will we have an updated fiscal note on HB 5?
We'll check. I think the original was indeterminate, wasn't it?
Right, but since you've simplified it a lot, and they may be able to get something more accurate now.
And I think since the first fiscal note came out, there were the governor's bills that have come down that had fiscal notes, and they haven't updated in that regard. So we will make a request. And seeing no other questions or comments, we will stand adjourned. The time is 2:10 p.m.